The clock's running out on December deal drops at Lowe's, but there's still time to wrap up something they'll love. Shop great gifts under $50, like the DeWalt Elite Series 100-piece bit set. Plus, if you order by 2 p.m., you get same-day delivery by 8 p.m. Shop December deal drops while you can. Lowe's. We help, you save.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
The clock's running out on December deal drops at Lowe's, but there's still time to wrap up something they'll love. Shop great gifts under $50, like the DeWalt Elite Series 100-piece bit set. Plus, if you order by 2 p.m., you get same-day delivery by 8 p.m. Shop December deal drops while you can. Lowe's. We help, you save.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
This is continuous coverage in the trial of Brian Walsh from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
What could happen to a loving father and a loving husband?
It makes him lie to please the 4 days.
Search for the unspeakable on the internet. Those bodies are the one that you hear. Suggests it was an affair. There's no proof of that. There's no proof that Brian Walsh knew anything about an affair between the woman he loved and William Pence. Money? Second reason that the government suggests? Family money? Money that the family had worked together for years and continued to talk about in text messages and the sales of property? Trying to protect the assets for the benefit of the whole family and the future of the 3 children. A motive? There's no motive. Refusal to consider prison for a terrible mistake he made. The case that began in 2018. There's no proof of that. That he was afraid to go to prison. Who wants to go to prison? But present was always on the table. And it was just something that he had to face up and something that he did. So, what would cause a loving husband and a loving father to do the things that you heard about in this case? Could it be something that was sudden, something that was unexpected, something that was unbelievable? Something that only a medical examiner would understand, have knowledge of, but not a man like Brian Walsh. Something that is terrifying, something that defies logic when it happens. How do we know that Mr. Walsh was a loving father and a loving husband? We know from much of the testimony of Jim Mutlum. We know from simple testimony from Julie Basler from Kinderkey. When asked questions about her experience with Mr. Walsh and the children, that he would show up and he'd be interested and he'd be friendly, and he was always interested in the progress of his children. And how do we know he was a good father? Because Anna Walsh trusted him with their three children, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for all those times she was up in Washington, D.C. The unthinkable happens. It happens in a variety of ways. And the Commonwealth must prove to you beyond a reasonable doubt that a homicide occurred, that a killing occurred. Nothing proves that beyond a reasonable doubt on the facts and circumstances and the evidence presented to you. There's evidence that he lied to the police. There's evidence that he searched the internet. There's evidence to be disposed of the body. But there is no proof in all of the evidence that you have heard of Victor Simpson that he ever once thought about harming the woman he loved. That he ever thought about harming the woman he loved. That he ever planned to harm. That he ever intended to harm. When we talk about the evidence of the affair, when we talk about evidence of financial concerns, when we talk about evidence of being afraid to go to prison, those are the motives that the Commonwealth needs to prove to you to support any notion that a loving husband and a loving father would kill his wife. And the evidence suggests there was no motive at all. And without a motive, without a reason that is based on facts and circumstances, logic and understanding, without that, you have a sudden and unexpected event that results in confusion, in panic, and fear. All of those things that are so troubling and horrific that you've heard evidence about, they may be argued that they show consciousness of guilt. But people do things, terrible things sometimes, not out of guilt, but out of fear, out of disbelief. Out of confusion. Certainly, a loving father and a loving husband would feel guilty about what he did do. not just about lying to the police, but what he did do in the context of what he did to the woman he loved. In a moment, in hours, and in days of confusion and disbelief and horror. But that feeling of guilt had nothing to do with a killer, because he never killed Emma Walsh. You will hear arguments that you've seen the evidence that might evoke emotion. Who wouldn't feel emotional in what you've heard, what you've seen? But your obligation, and I don't mean to sound like I'm lecturing you at all. Her Honor will instruct you on the law, and that is not my province, but you cannot base your verdict on sympathy for Anna Walsh. You can't base your verdict on anger to what Mr. Walsh did. You can't base your verdict on passion, based on the evidence that you've heard that is upsetting and terrifying and at times disgusting. But that's not what you can do as jurors in this case. At the beginning of this case, when you were sworn as jurors, you might not recall it, but the clerk of this court read you some words. To this indictment, the defendant pleads not guilty. He places himself before this country which you are, the obligation that you have accepted in this case is unlike perhaps any obligation that you've ever accepted in your life. Perhaps. That's for you to judge. But your obligation requires that without passion, and without anger, and without sympathy, that you assess the facts, as troubling as they are, and at times as horrific as they are, and make your verdict rest on the evidence, and nothing less, and nothing more. Unbelievable, facts that don't make sense at times, something that is incongruent. An example of that is the end of Mr. Jim Mickle's testimony, where for almost an hour, he talked beautifully about the love between these two people, that he talked glowingly about Mr. Walsh. And then toward the end of his examination, he wanted to say something about now he was thinking there might have been some kind of problem. And reflect upon the evidence that he gave of a phone call he had with Mr. Walsh on the 4th, when the conversation was confusing to Mr. Motlow, confusing, where he kept asking what could have happened that would result in Anna Walsh leaving. The lie that Mr. Walsh was telling people out of fear that no one was going to believe him about what happened, so he lied. But consider the way that Mr. Mucklow had a terrible time trying to understand that. And why? Because he knew both of them. Because what he was thinking, why would Anna Walsh leave? They love each other. I know them both. It makes no sense. And that is what happens when something happens that is totally confusing. You just can't believe it. And you seek answers. You yearn for answers that make sense of something. And when something sudden and unexpected happens, something tragic, your ability
to come to terms with it when it's such a dynamic, such a tragedy. He changed. He changed. The evidence of the searches, the dark, troubled evidence of the searches. They began at 4:52 a.m. on January 1st of 2023. And the first one is, how do you dispose of a body? It causes chills. It causes disgust.
Adam Clark.
Look at all of those searches. Think of how they evolved. Consider how they go from one subject to another in rapid fashion. Searches conducted by a man that is in disbelief, in confusion. 5 hours spending with his wife on New Year's Eve, enjoying life, talking about the future. And then a sudden and unexpected tragedy happens, and it doesn't make sense. If Mr. Walsh began to make those searches with murder in his heart as a result of murder, then why isn't the first search how to dispose of a body after murder? Because that's the search that occurred 6 hours later. And when you see that word murder, no one would not react to that word. And certainly as jurors in this matter, you're expected to react in a way to that. What does that mean? Does that mean that he in fact murdered his wife? But think about it in context. In this case, on these facts, context matters. And so the first time the word murder is used in these horrific searches is 6 hours after they begin. And I tried to ask Trooper Garino, one of the forensic specialists, as he called himself, associated with the Mass State Police. I tried to ask him, well, it's only logical, isn't it, that if you don't get results, you change the wording? We all know that from our own common experience. And you look at those searches that came and went during this time, and the results had to do with funeral parlors and cemeteries and things like that. But Mr. Walsh, given the tragedy that occurred to his wife, and given the time that had passed and his fear and disbelief, he couldn't call a funeral parlor. He needed to try to understand what can I do. Then the searches become darker. They become more upsetting. Now the thought is dismemberment. And there's searches like that. You've heard about them. You'll read about them. And then you see searches that cover days. And there's searches about clean. And there's searches about how to clean up. You'll read them. And even though they don't talk about murder, they are equally upsetting because you're thinking, as jurors in this case, he's thinking about cleaning up the basement. He's thinking about how you clean a concrete floor. Context. 1,034 pages of digital data. 3,667 records taken from his MacBook. Not one record, not one page refers to any plan. Not one record, not one page refers to any intent to kill. Nothing. So keep it in context when you review. I suggest to you respectfully, you are the juror. What is the end of premeditation? There's evidence of a knife. There's evidence of a knife that is seen in a kitchen cabinet. Did I please have exhibit 201? And next exhibit, 202. And finally, exhibit 203. The knife. It was above a refrigerator. It was in plain view. Had no visual red blood stain. And yet the government wants you to think about this knife. So think about it. Don't ignore it. Do not refuse to consider it. Of course you will. But think about it. In a cabinet above a refrigerator. And they first test it with some screening test. It doesn't prove that it has even blood on it. And they take it, and they shoot. And then, what happens is everybody loses interest at the knife. Everybody, the Mass State Police, the crime lab. There's no further testing of this knife. And ask yourself, if that knife is to be considered a weapon used, then why is it in that cabinet? You have heard evidence of bags and bags being thrown in dumpsters over a period of days. The government wants you to think that Mr. Walsh killed his wife and perhaps used this knife. Then why was it sitting in a cabinet days later in open view for the police? What logic is that? And there is no proof that it had one piece of biological evidence on it tied to any killing or any harm. And they simply lost interest in it. You can take it down now. Digital data, talked about that briefly, but there is nothing in that data. All of that data. And we're talking about text messages. We're talking about MacBook searches. We're talking about the life that's embodied in computers that this day and age we know apparently keep track of everything we do and to some extent everything we think about. Because that's how the government is using that data. They ask you to look at certain things and indicate and try to argue that, oh, this is what he was thinking. So look at it and judge for yourself. What's in this data that demonstrates premeditation, or intent to kill, or intent to harm? You have heard and seen much physical evidence. You've seen pictures of gray slippers with blood on. You've seen pictures of all kinds of physical evidence. And if the argument is made by the government, something about a dark gray slipper with blood on it indicates that a murder happened because, listen to the argument, of course you will. But a theory, an opinion, does not make it true. And to suggest something like, the evidence shows that Mr. Walsh went and bought a Tyvek suit, and maybe there's just not enough blood on the Tyvek suit to satisfy the Commonwealth, and so they suggest that some killing happened, and that's why there's so much blood on that slipper and those slippers and all that other evidence. But ask yourself, what do I know about that evidence now from what we heard? Every piece of evidence was put into a bag, but then was put into a compactor eventually and was pressed together and then found. And you will see all of this evidence of when they pulled it out of dumpsters and unloaded the bags, and they first put it on damp ground without any paper below it, without any tarp below it. And you heard from no less than three witnesses. Mr. Gould from the Mass State Police Crime Lab, Mr. Sheehan from the Mass State Police Crime Lab, and Ms. Saleem from the DNA unit. They all consistently said cross-contamination or transfer. They used different terms, but they all agreed. So the evidence, the physical aspect of the evidence, the thing you see in the photographs, the thing you see now, if you open up one of the bags and take things out, is not representative, or may not be representative, of how it looked before. And you must consider that. But when the government makes an argument based on the state of the physical evidence as it appears now, ask yourself, maybe that makes sense, but maybe there's another way of thinking about it. And why is that important to your deliberations? Because you are allowed to rely on what's called circumstantial evidence. You're allowed to rely on inferences. And Her Honor will instruct you on that. I will not. But whatever reason and basis you have for making your choice and determining your decision must be reasonable. And if you, as jurors, talking amongst yourselves, find that some of your fellow jurors say, well, I think maybe it means this, and I believe this, and your other jurors, fellow jurors, say, I think this, and I believe this, you'll all consider it. But if you don't agree, then you have to ask yourself, is that inference reasonable? Is that circumstantial evidence built upon inference? Is that reasonable? And can I use that? And should I use that to try to reach a verdict under a standard of reasonable doubt or moral certainty? What is the evidence that something violent happened in this house? I went through every room as best I could with Mr. Sheehan. There was nothing found in the upstairs bedroom. There was nothing found in the sinks and basins, showers, of multiple bathrooms. Nothing found, meaning biological evidence that might indicate something violent occurred. There was nothing found in the kitchen other than a knife that they lost interest in. There was nothing found in the living room that had padding around the fireplace to protect the children from falling. There was nothing in that bedroom where Anna Walsh, Brian Walsh, as adults, enjoyed their life together and had spent their life together, perhaps every night, before she moved to D.C. to take that job. How do we know that? We know that because the photographs show there was nothing there. Even what was characterized as red-brown stains on curtains in the bedroom turned out not to be blood at all. We know that because trained examiners from the Mass State Police examined probably every square inch of that house. We know that because we saw photographs and heard testimony about floor that was dug up based on their experience and training. That biological evidence, like blood, can fall between the cracks of flooring and reside on the subfloor. And so they tore the floor up, and you saw those photographs, and you'll have them. And nothing, nothing is found. Nothing at all. I asked Mr. Sheehan about blood spatter. And he forthrightly and honestly said, I'm not a blood spatter expert. But he explained it sufficiently to you. Someone wielding a knife or a weapon and causes blood to let out of a body, and you look for blood that has spattered with directionality. Nothing. Nothing in the bedroom, nothing in the living room, nothing in the bathrooms. No evidence that blood drained down the drains. Could I have Exhibit 217, please? That test that I asked Mr. Sheehan about, the Serotec HIM test, that checks for hemoglobin, for blood, that test, he agreed, can detect blood at the sensitivity of 20 nanograms per milliliter. 20 nanograms. A nanogram, as he agreed, 1/1,000,000th of a gram. Think of how minuscule that is. And they used that all over the house. And so the government elicited questions and answers from many of their state police, the 10 or 20. They didn't call everybody. That's up to them. But apparently there was no need to, because 10 people or more, as Mr. Sheehan had described to you, he was estimating. He was trying to be as honest as he could and credible, and he was. 10 people pouring over that house all day on January 8th. 10 more people or more pouring over that house on January 9th with their tools and their experience, and they don't find anything. Except multiple bloodstains where? In the basement. In the basement. On the concrete floor. Ask yourself, when you heard testimony that Mr. Walsh attempted to clean, and so therefore they couldn't find evidence in the other parts of the house because he cleaned it. Well, ask yourself, wait a minute. Is that logical to suggest that he cleaned the bedroom up so well nobody could find a thing? He cleaned the living room up where the rug may have been, and they couldn't find anything. Well, then you see those searches where he searches specifically for how to clean concrete. So you might infer, and it might be a reasonable inference, that he attempted to clean that concrete floor. And yet, what was found on the concrete floor? Multiple red-brown stains that turned out to be blood, and in some instances, we can all agree, based on the testimony of Ms. Sling, the profile, those blood drops, matched the profile of Anna Walsh. So to suggest that Mr. Walsh did everything he could to clean the basement, concrete floor with hydrogen peroxide and mops and cleaning fluids, only to have blood found on the floor, defies a reasonable inference that he was able to clean any part of that house sufficiently to avoid detection. And why is that important? Because nothing violent happened in that house. And that's why there is no biological or blood evidence anywhere in that house. The act of trying to hide the body of his wife and the blood evidence that is seen on that carpet that's what happened. There's no blood in the living room. The inference might be that the carpet is taken downstairs. Because you can look at those pictures, multiple physical pieces of carpet.
I'm sure.
If there is no evidence of who could it happen, and there's no evidence that anything was done before, Mrs. Walsh died. And there's no evidence of premeditation or anything. There is evidence of lying and disposing of the body. You can take that down with you. So now we look at the evidence, and I'm just going to characterize it. Some of the evidence that the Commonwealth presented to you, there is no question, but their obligation is to present to you evidence. But I just ask you to think about, in some cases, how that evidence was presented to you. And I'm going to use a phrase that may or may not be entirely accurate, but it's cherry picking. It's looking at thousands of points of data and asking you to think about it, but not telling you why you should think about it. And what am I talking about specifically? And I'll give you some examples. We already talked about the hole in the ceiling, but let's talk about it a minute. They kept talking to you about that hole in the bedroom ceiling as if it was of some significance. And yet you recall the testimony of Mr. Sheehan. I didn't see anything significant about it. It looked like somebody might have fallen through the ceiling. And there's nothing significant about the pieces that Mr. Walsh had stored in the cabinet in that same bedroom. I asked Mr. Sheehan about that. No, I didn't see anything significant about that. Yet you kept being given that evidence. And then as the evidence developed, for some reason, there's Mr. Murphy. And it came out in evidence that Mr. Murphy had, in fact, contacted Mr. Walsh because there was a promotion going on. It wasn't that Mr. Walsh said, hey, come and fix this hole, this suspicious hole. No, he was contacted. And he didn't respond right away, but then he did. And for some reason, they keep insisting that that hole is of some significance, but they don't tell you why, they just give it to you. They do the same thing with the searches. Remember when Trooper Keefe was sitting right here and he's asked to look through those thousands of, 250 pages of the search history from the iPhone Mini 13, the phone that belonged to Mr. Walsh, and he's asked to look at it and says, do you see searches there to go to the MGM? Yes, I do. Nothing else. No explanation why that is significant, why it's important to try to determine if a man committed premeditated murder. You're just throwing that pieces of evidence. Why? Why were you given? Why was Trooper Keefe asked to tell you about a song, a partial song title? And when you go over that evidence, look through there if you choose to, and I encourage you to do that. And you see song after song and movie title after movie title. Why is it that the government throws that at you and says, think about this? For what reason? And then they present to you through Trooper Guarino. Something about a porn movie. I'll just take this opportunity right now to apologize to each and every one of you for some of the questions I asked. But it just didn't make sense that you would take that type of evidence and suggest that it has anything to do with determining whether someone committed deliberate premeditated murder because there's a word in the title of a movie. And that's what I'm talking about, the quality of some of the evidence here thrown at you as if it means something, that it's significant, and yet here you are being asked to determine if someone, Mr. Walsh, committed premeditated murder with a specific intent to kill the woman he loved. When we talk about premeditated murder, when we talk about planning, you have to ask yourself, did I hear evidence of the conduct of a man who premeditated, a man that had thought about a killing, a man that had planned? I mean, think about what you heard. And we're not going to repeat all the things I've already said, but I want you to focus on one other piece of evidence. I asked Detective Schmidt, when you went down to the basement on January 4th, you saw some bags down in the basement. Yes, I did. What did you think was in those bags? I thought they were pieces of rum. My goodness. What does that tell you about the thinking process and the sloppiness and the lack of any planning or careful thought that you would expect out of someone who had planned a murder? And then he lets a police officer walk down in the basement, and the police officer, based on his training and experience, uses, I think he said, his boot, and he felt it, and he said, felt like pieces of rug to me. Rug? That is in evidence? It has blood. Think about all of that when you're thinking about it. Did this man, Mr. Walsh, did he plan anything? No. Did he intend to kill anybody? No. Did he kill Anna Walsh? No. The evidence does not support a finding of premeditated murder with specific intent to kill based on the evidence, not based on sympathy, based on the evidence. What's some other evidence that is troubling? Mr. Walsh is talking to the police, and he says, I messenger, when asked about, and we started explaining, you know, things will come up on my phone that I thought were for me, but then it turns out they were for Anna. And so the government seizes upon that evidence and suggests that there's evidence that Mr. Walsh had seen text messages between Anna Walsh and William Fasto. And those text messages between Anna Walsh and William Fasto, some text messages are placed into evidence, and I'm sure you'll look at them. And why would the government want you to believe that Mr. Walsh saw those text messages? Because some of the entries in those text messages are very upsetting. They may very well enrage a husband to read about what was going on in those text messages. So you'll look at them, but ask yourself, as you look at them, and perhaps as you think, I could see that might upset, that might put somebody in a rage. Problem is, there is absolutely no evidence Mr. Walsh ever saw any text message because he was trying to say, I messenger. And now you know from the testimony of Trooper Keith, there's no such thing as I messenger. We're talking about Facebook Messenger. But the important thing is, there is no evidence in all of the digital data that you have before you, in all the digital data that they examined, Mr. Walsh ever saw anything going on between his wife and William Fast. And when you look at those text messages, and you might have some question about them, and if the government stands up and says, well, he saw those because he told them that he was seeing iMessenger, which doesn't exist, then ask yourself, why is it that on New Year's Eve, Anna Walsh is taking all these photographs? It's festive. It's a lovely situation. And she says, in the presence of Brian Walsh, as she and Jim Mutlow were taking photographs. Hey, why don't we send a photograph to Will Fausto? And was there any evidence that he reacted, Mr. Walsh? No. And when asked by Attorney Porges, well, so what happened next? And Mr. Mutlow really took efforts to remember. And then he said, oh, yeah, that happened around before the young boy woke up and came downstairs. And that was around 10:30. So if you just think about that, then the festive and jovial celebration continued for another 2 hours. There is no evidence that he reacted. Mr. Walsh reacted to them sending a photo. Why? Because he knew his wife had a crush on Will Fausto, and it didn't even make him jealous. And how do we know that? Because she told her friend, Alyssa Kirby. And Alyssa Kirby was asked, and she said, you know, Hannah told me that he didn't get jealous. He's not the jealous type. In fact, I wish he was more jealous. Please consider that in the context of this notion that the motive for a killing that did not occur, but the Commonwealth's theory of a motive is anger over an affair. There's no evidence of that. Dr. Atkinson told you. Dr. Atkinson described to you the phenomenon of sudden unexpected death. It happens. Just because it's rare, just because the government will undoubtedly argue that that is nonsense, listen to their argument. But Dr. Atkinson made it clear it happens. It happens in young and old, male and female. It happens unexpectedly. In fact, it happens with people who have never manifested any problem before. It happens in athletes. And how do we know that it's not absurd, even though it might be rare? How do we know it is an important aspect of what happens to people? Because the laws of this state mandate that the office, the chief medical examiner, get information from doctors, police officers, nurses, when there is a sudden death, when someone is otherwise healthy. They're mandated to investigate that. So there is a statute that Dr. Atkinson told you a little bit about on cross-examination. So ask yourself, is it as unlikely? Is it bizarre? Because Anna Walsh worked out? Yes, she had been sick before. She had been with Alyssa Kirby in the days leading up to this, and Alyssa Kirby wound up having the flu. But that's not what really is at issue here. Sudden and unexpected death may occur because someone is ill. All we know is that it happens. And the fact that someone doesn't believe it could happen doesn't mean that it doesn't. Importantly, though, think about the shock of it happening. Think about the effect it would have on anyone. A lay person that has no idea it could happen. You're down celebrating with your wife and your friend, and then the tragedy happens. And you panic because you can't believe, you don't understand, and you don't think anybody's going to believe you. Context. I walked Trooper Keith through all of that information, something that he had not done yet. So what did you hear? We went methodically. Sometimes, I'm sure for some of you, it was a little painful. It took a little while. But we went through hour by hour, day by day, that basically was the life and the experience that Anna Walsh and her husband, Brian Walsh, were going through in just the days leading up to January 1st of 2023. And what do you see? And you'll have that evidence. You won't have it compiled in the way that I presented it to you, because Trooper Keith never saw fit to assemble it in a way where you could really see what was going on. But what do you see, and what did you learn from the evidence? Two people communicating by phone and by text, talking, talking about sales of property, talking about investments, talking about the future, talking about reinvesting, talking about buying new property in D.C., talking about all of that, and it's all in the text. Joking when Anna Walsh was ill and stayed home and told her husband that in the text. And then they joke about it. I'll get you a plunger. And she responds, it's right there on the text. Joking back and forth in the days leading up to New Year's Eve. I'll tell you what, I'll buy the plunger. You buy me a Porsche. And then you see him shopping for a Porsche for the woman that he loved. How does it go from, I'm going to find you the Porsche you want, that speaks once again to the financial issues that were non-existent? How does it go from that to someone who is purportedly premeditating and intending to kill his wife? And those texts leap right up until she arrives by plane in Cohasset to celebrate. So, context. Once again, divorce? About 11 minutes of talking about divorce and searching about divorce in 7 days of phone calls. And how did that divorce search come up? It came up in context of protecting the family assets because they just sold the house in Revere that Jim Mutwell told you about. And they're trying to protect it. And the thought is to roll it over in a 1053C. And Mr. Mutlow explained that to you. Planning for the future. That is the relationship between Brian Walsh and Anna Walsh in the days leading up to January 1st. So now we have come to just the evidence that once again, just explains their relationship. Not supposition. Not trying to make up what they said to each other. You have that in their text. You have that. Yes, we get to New Year's Eve. We get to a festive event. Jovial. Laughter. Love. Described in various terms, various ways, not for 30 minutes, not for 1 hour, but for 5 or 6 hours. Laughter, talking about the future. Jim Mutlow described it for you. Brian Walsh cooking, standing across from the island, feeding both of them. Talking, laughing. You see in the testimony that, yes, there was an affair. He didn't know it. He loved his wife. He treated his wife like the wife he loved, the mother of his children, until the sudden, unexpected event happened. Imagine you are so in love. You support your wife to get a job in D.C., you're going to take care of the kids because, one, you love your children, but you want to take care of them. You want to share property and protect the assets, so everything goes into her name to protect it because he has this federal case. So let's protect our financials for the future. And then you hear the testimony of Alyssa Kirby. Yes, she was upset. There's no doubt Anna Walsh was upset. What exactly she was upset about? Maybe things weren't going really well in the affair she was having. Or maybe she was, in fact, stressed out. Who wouldn't be? They were living apart. She wasn't seeing her children. Now, maybe, you know, it's up to her. Anna Walsh was a wonderful person and a wonderful mother. And that's why he loved her so much. But she had another life, and she went to Dublin, and that's another piece of evidence. They want to suggest to you he knows something about Dublin. Where is the evidence of that? None. And you hear Alyssa, her choked up with tears, sobbing on the stand, but nonetheless recalling a conversation she had on 12/29, 3 days before January 1st. What does Anna tell her?
Well, I don't know if I love him as much as I used to. Those are her words. I'm paraphrasing, but that was the gist of it. But I want him to take responsibility. Why? Not so she could kick him out. Not so she could leave him. So they could reunite as a family. That was what Anna Walsh was talking about. That's what she was thinking, even though she was stressed, even though she was upset. And things like that happen in families, but families make it through. And that's what she was expressing. That's what she was expressing.
For her best friend, Alyssa.
Her.
Had I ever heard that 160 would not be? We are now at the end of the New Year's Eve party, and they sign the champagne bottle. And we were talking about the feelings and the emotions and the state of mind of Anna Walsh and Brian Walsh and looking towards the future. And this is on January 1st. This is on the day that the tragedy happened. And finally, I'm sorry, 169. Oh, I apologize. My fault. I'm sorry. Exhibit 257. And that's the champagne box that was signed. And what are the words? What a year. And yet we are still here and together. Let's make 2023 the best one yet. We are the authors of our lives. Courage, love, perseverance, compassion. Those are the words of Anna Walsh talking to her husband. Look what she says. What a year, and yet we are still here. What does that tell you? Yes, they had been through a lot. She missed her children. What mother wouldn't? But they were working toward the future. And one final thing about the state of mind of Brian Walsh at this period of time. He made reservations for a New Year's Day dinner so he could be alone with his wife. And the evidence of that is in these records. And I'm not going to have it called up. I'll just tell you. Exhibit 79, page 186. Record 682, that's the data. He's researching where to take her out. And you'll see a reference to Nightingale, a restaurant that I asked Trooper Keith about. A restaurant that's right on the line of Marblehead and Lynn. Exhibit 59, at 12:27, those records indicate that Mr. Walsh credit card used to reserve dinner for $573.76, so him and Anna could spend New Year's Day celebrating. And exhibit 17, a text from Nightshade Restaurant itself, acknowledging the reservation. And those were the plans that he made. And the government will suggest that's some kind of evidence of premeditation. Well, it's not any evidence of anything but love. And I'll just tell you, when you look at that evidence, you'll see that that email exchange was deleted. It's right there in the evidence. And then you heard the federal probation officer saying he wouldn't be allowed to go there. He'd have to get permission. So yes, if Mr. Walsh lied to his probation officer, for what reason? So he could take his wife out for a New Year's dinner, and that evidence, and the evidence that you saw in that champagne box, is what their life was right at the moment before the tragedy happened. That is the evidence. I'm sorry I talked for so long. I apologize. Mr. Walsh loved Anna Walsh, the mother of his three children. There's no evidence that he deliberately premeditated a murder. There's no evidence that he ever intended to kill Anna Walsh. None whatsoever. Mr. Walsh is not guilty. He's not guilty of murder. Thank you.
Jurors can't. I want you to take a moment to stand up. Everyone done.
More continuous coverage in the trial of Brian Walsh from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today is coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a moment.
The clock's running out on December deal drops at Lowe's, but there's still time to wrap up something they'll love. Shop great gifts under $50, like the DeWalt Elite Series 100-piece bit set. Plus, if you order by 2 p.m., you get same-day delivery by 8 p.m. Shop December deal drops while you can. Lowe's. We help, you save.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
The clock's running out on December deal drops at Lowe's, but there's still time to wrap up something they'll love. Shop great gifts under $50, like the DeWalt Elite Series 100-piece bit set. Plus, if you order by 2 p.m., you get same-day delivery by 8 p.m. Shop December deal drops while you can. Lowe's. We help, you save.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once, a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
The clock's running out on December deal drops at Lowe's, but there's still time to wrap up something they'll love. Shop great gifts under $50, like the DeWalt Elite Series 100-piece bit set. Plus, if you order by 2 p.m., you get same-day delivery by 8 p.m. Shop December deal drops while you can. Lowe's. We help, you save.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
The clock's running out on December deal drops at Lowe's, but there's still time to wrap up something they'll love. Shop great gifts under $50, like the DeWalt Elite Series 100-piece bit set. Plus, if you order by 2 p.m., you get same-day delivery by 8 p.m. Shop December deal drops while you can. Lowe's. We help, you save.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
The clock's running out on December deal drops at Lowe's, but there's still time to wrap up something they'll love. Shop great gifts under $50, like the DeWalt Elite Series 100-piece bit set. Plus, if you order by 2 p.m., you get same-day delivery by 8 p.m. Shop December deal drops while you can. Lowe's, we help, you save.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
The clock's running out on December deal drops at Lowe's, but there's still time to wrap up something they'll love. Shop great gifts under $50, like the DeWalt Elite Series 100-piece bit set. Plus, if you order by 2 p.m., you get same-day delivery by 8 p.m. Shop December deal drops while you can. Lowe's. We help, you save.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock,
LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.